Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, I'm Paco Romain.
And I'm George Chen, and you're listening to SubDoc. This is a show where we talk to people from the world of comedy, music, TV and film about documentaries.
This week, we watched Lo and Behold with comedian performance artist Christina Wong.
Lo and Behold is Werner Herzog's 2016 documentary exploring the genesis and dark underbelly of the internet. And he does it as only Herzog can.
Christina has appeared on The Nightly Show with Larry Wilmore and has a one-woman touring show called The Wong Street Journal. You can find her trolling Donald Trump on Twitter at Miss Christina Wong.
Well, we're rolling now.
Yay.
We finally got the cards to work. And our guest today, Christina Wong.
Hello.
Hi, Christina. George.
Good to have you in the home. You live close by. We're kind of neighbors-ish.
K-town, yeah.
Yeah, more K-town.
One bus.
Yeah. And we were just talking about all the theater projects that you do. You are, as your business card in front of me says, performance artist, comedian, writer. Now, you've done a little bit of stand-up, but mostly you're doing...
Mostly, comedian is just an easier way for people to not be afraid of what performance art is. and
you're not going to, like, kill an animal and smear it on you? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think performance art is also misleading because I'm not going to nail myself to a Volkswagen.
That's good.
Or shoot my friend.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you do kind of like it's only you on stage, but you use a lot of like video and PowerPoint.
Show that I'm touring now is the Wong Street Journal, and that's all hand-sewn props. So I've sewn 100 hashtags out of felt, and I do a live hashtag war on stage. And that's a show just about my trip to Uganda a few years ago where I did volunteer work and then I ended up making a rap album.
What?
Local rappers.
Whoa.
You like spitting some bars for us?
You got bars you can spit?
All right.
you need a beat?
Eating and cleaning. She's a silent force of life. She ain't your slave nor your property just because she's a wife. Holds it in when it matters, empathizes and strife. She feels the pain of a village and leads it back to all right.
Yeah.
Nice.
Awesome.
Yeah. And it was my first rap album.
Ugandan rapping.
That's so cool. Did you have a backing band and stuff?
Yeah, so the story is I went out there. So northern Uganda is where the civil war ended in 2006. And so they're rebuilding. And there's sort of like a boom town in that area because a lot of charities have set up there. And a lot of people from around the country of Uganda have moved there to take advantage of, like, okay, they're not at war. We can set up businesses for cheaper. People are not in camps. You know, it's economic opportunity to move somewhere post-war. And so I was there volunteering with a microloan organization. I was walking one night. It's pitch black there. You know, imagine, like, there's no ambient light, no street lights. And I was like, I'm going to have my first solo financial transaction. I'm going to buy some street food. And I see these boys at a stand, and two of the guys who are really cool, like one's wearing a puffy jacket, one's wearing a trucker hat. They're holding hands. And I had a moment because these guys were trying to overcharge me for food. And I was going, "Don't charge me the Mzungu price." And Mzungu is the word for white person, which is what I am, even as a Chinese American over there. And so I see these two guys holding hands, and I had a moment where I'm like, is this the underground gay community of Gulu? Because gay and lesbians have to organize in secret for the civil rights. And I'd read about this, and I thought, it's happening right here in this food stand. And so these guys were joking around and laughing and taking pictures, and they're like, come follow us back here, pointing to like a shack behind them. And I thought, oh.
You're going to watch an orgy.
No, I'm not. No, George.
George.
I was going to organize.
Keep it clean,
with them.
George.
Come on. But I was like, okay, so I follow all these strange men into a dark room, and it's a music studio. And then that night, basically the producer Nerio, who's become one of my very good friends, he says, okay, start singing. And so I just start to sing about, or just go, yeah, Mzungu price. Yeah, 10,000 shillings. Yeah. Like I'm basically describing what happened out on the street being overcharged. And then the different rappers who rap in Luo, which is a local language, and Swahili. There's 44 languages in Uganda that are used. We didn't use all 44 of them. At least two of them were used, started to rap in local languages. And we recorded a song called Mzungu Price that night. And that's also the name of the album.
So you're the only English on the track.
No, they also speak English. Yeah. If you go to school, because of this great gift called colonization.
It is a great
gift. If you go to school, you learn. Well, that's a good one. you learn English. So, So not everybody speaks English. If you were in a displacement camp during the war, you didn't have any education. Mm-hmm. And you speak just local language. You don't, and so, so some of those women who are just coming out of war are learning to read and write in their local language for the first time.
Mm.
And that's, so you went over there to do what kind of work?
It was volunteering with a microloan organization and doing research for a show that I knew would be called The Wong Street Journal. And and I thought it was going to be a show about economics, which is why it was called this. But I realized I couldn't do that show without acknowledging the dynamics of race and privilege. And how weird it was for me as an Asian American who here in America is what I think very, politicized and educated, and then showing up and being the face of evil.
You're Mzungu.
Being the recipient of all the benefits of colonialism, being the face of colonialism, being the enactor of colonialism. Mm. You know, every sort of economic decision, or every time I took a photo, or every time I didn't understand something, I felt like the dumb white guy in the room.
Right.
And there was no other dumb white guy I could be like, it's his fault.
Right.
No, I'm the dummy in the room. So for me, what felt relevant is, I think we're really in America, there's a lot of armchair activism. And that was a moment where I didn't have the armchair. I didn't have a screen to sit back and judge. I couldn't just block something or unfriend anybody. I had to figure out how in my day-to-day interactions to be of service to people's self-determination, be aware that I was being an asshole. And this is just being an American, right? Mm-hmm. And how to just move through a situation, not around it.
How long were you there?
I was there for a month, but time in Africa,
all of that in a month?
Yeah, I made a rap album in 3 weeks in northern Uganda.
And that wasn't the plan. You went out there to do
that. No, I had thought, maybe I'll meet artists and maybe in the future I can come back. But that, to me, that was an ethnomusicologist's dream come true. Because just witnessing the interactions in the small studio and working with them, it's like I every vacation I've gone on since, and I don't consider that a vacation, by the way, but every trip I've gone to has seemed so boring.
Yeah.
Went to Australia last year, scuba diving, and I'm like, nothing will ever compare to making a hit rap album.
No. You're like
little post-conflict northern Uganda.
Was it a hit? It was a hit.
It was a hit. It plays on the radio.
What?
You get your residuals and your royalties.
You get sound scan royalties.
No, but they get my residuals. I pay them.
Yeah.
Is your rap name Little Wong?
No, it's Christina Wong Zunga.
Wong Zunga.
I don't know where the diminutive came from, Paco, but
as a little Wayne. That was my joke. That's
far. Woo.
That's all right. It's always good when you have to explain that stuff. That's awesome. That is awesome.
I feel like that interconnectivity of international crossing these barriers of or intersecting, that's something that Werner Herzog would have been very excited about.
Oh, yes.
Would have loved.
Good segue.
Sat in with you on that conference, and he would have said, the languages, there's 44 languages, three of which are being used for this new kind of beat-driven spoken music.
In the music shack, they sing songs. I can't do it. You have to do a bit of Werner. What's your Werner?
Mine's pretty decent.
We are all Mzungu here.
Never listen to this cassette tape.
So are you a fan of Werner? Because we're going to talk about Lo and
Behold. I thought I was, but I guess I'm a fan of Errol Morris. We were talking about it. I'm like, what's Werner's movie where he interviews four different people that do different things? You're like, no, that's Errol Morris. I'm like, oh my God.
Fast, Cheap, Out of Control.
What was I think?
They have similar styles. They have similar styles.
They're both like, they approach it as art film kind of, art film documentary. But you're saying, was that that four people being interviewed, that was something that was influencing you and something you're working on?
I realize I've been using the wrong analogy. I've been like, you know, it's like a Werner Herzog movie where you have four different things that connect. I'm working.
It's
on
like
this,
a bear. Yeah.
I have this play I'm working on called Attention Please, and it's a solo play, and it's all, everything that sort of has to do with sort of people, reality television. My fascination with people like Tila Tequila, with Rodney King as the original reality television star, is this, you know, this person who became famous by nature of being on camera,
right?
And then later was on Celebrity Rehab with Dr. Drew. And then myself as a reality, I've auditioned for reality stars many years ago. I had one experience that was really traumatizing on a show that ended up not airing, called Shelarious. The search for the next funny woman. Like, that's already an awful. That's already
just starting with the pun title.
Yeah, but just the audition itself, I was severely traumatized. Like, they find ways to get you to talk about.
Yeah.
Shit, you shouldn't talk about an audition.
Have you watched Unreal at all?
Yeah, I'm so into that. I love that show. I'm obsessed with reality TV, and I think a lot of it is because I tour one-person shows, which are sort of about my life, and I feel like it's a similar dilemma that porn stars have when they retire. It's like when you're... I'm not doing pornography with my body, but I am putting a specific narrative out about myself over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes hard to distinguish who I am in private space and who really I am in public space.
What is that specific narrative?
Well, in Wong Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which was my show about depression.
Wait, she's using all the puns, so it's okay if we do.
Yeah, exactly.
So in that show, that's about a character named Christina Wong out to save all Asian American women from depression and suicide and then falling apart during the course of the show.
Oh.
And during my tour, it was so meta because during the tour, I was falling apart during my tour.
Oh.
And women were coming to me like, and I don't resent them or anything. I get like when you put yourself out there like that, people are going to want you to help them. But like I was in a lot of a situation where I feel like I was being brought to campuses where I think they really thought I could
help
fix, be all.
Yeah.
And that's like, not how things work.
No.
And I... So this sort of God complex and this guilt of like not fixing things really stuck with me, and I didn't know how to move on from that show because I felt like one, suicide is like this recession-proof topic. It's a really sick way of describing it.
That is true.
But it was like, how do you move on? I just didn't know who I was anymore, and that's sort of how I ended up going to Uganda. Is I was just like, well, I'm gonna get, you know, it's the sort of narrative of the American who doesn't know what to do. You go to another country where,
and you cut rap albums.
You give them your problems.
Yeah, yeah.
Under the guise of saving them.
Yeah.
Which is sort of what happened there.
Wow.
That's
Attention Please
is
a lot about connecting these stories of people working out their shit in public in this kind of reality setting. I mean, I would argue that Donald Trump is working his shit out right now on Twitter through this position of power.
If he had self-awareness, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, we can all kind of see him working.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Very transparent to the rest of us.
Yeah.
He's very clearly doing that. And I feel like that's what I was doing as a one-person show artist, right? I was working shit out in front of a jury of my peers. I was able to say things to my parents that I could never say to them in person with the safety of an audience and reviewers who loved me out there. So so that's what that show is. It's a very meta show. And that to me is sort of a Herzog or Errol Morris, but more specifically documentary, in that it's like all these associatively connected stories.
Yeah, I mean, like it seems like you have like there's sort of like the same way, like I guess there's sort of a godfather of the format, someone like a Spalding Gray, right? There's like a Spalding Gray, the real person. There's sort of like a Spalding Gray persona, or there's sort of like a degree of autobiography and a degree of like, let's just kind of explore these ideas. I mean, it's a slightly different beast than obviously like straight stand-up is, because you've got more tools at your disposal in a lot of ways. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, your audience is a little bit more clued in to what they're getting.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe that was a difference when you do college campuses.
In stand-up? Okay.
Then compared to stand-up, I guess. Yeah.
I guess stand-up, what feels a little different is than one person shows. I don't know that there's that much of a difference, honestly, but it's a little bit more flexible in terms of like, okay, well, I'll throw up these 10 jokes today and try these 10 new ones. But like with a show, it's pretty
scripted.
You're not doing crowd work in the in the show.
Yeah. And stand up, I think there is an arc, I guess, across an hour long show.
Yeah.
But, and maybe more storytelling and stuff that happens. But I definitely feel like when you have a hit, it's very tricky to figure out how to move on.
Interesting. Yeah. Can I ask you, this is something I've always wanted, like truth in art. So like truth, beholding to truth in a one-person show and a solo show, how strict are you to the narrative of truth?
Of like what happened.
Of what happened. And is it important to you, or is story more important? Like, where do you draw those distinctions?
Well, Wong Street Journal, I think, is actually, in terms of things that happen, it's pretty true. It's more that I edit out stuff that was less interesting to an arc. The whole premise of Wong Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, the depression show, is that this character, Christina Wong, says, I'm going to go save you all at the end of the show. But just so you know, I know a lot of people are wondering if the show's about me. It's all fiction. This show's entirely fiction. In fact, we're going to follow the dramatic arc of fiction during the show because it's a work of fiction, right? And so I draw the dramatic arc of fiction, and I keep attempting to do these very superficial things to fix this problem of depression right away. And then I turn on my overhead projector because in 2006, when I premiered the show, overhead projectors existed.
I'm a fan of overhead projectors. Yeah. Yeah.
I think I own the last two overhead projectors on this planet. And then we'd always end up being at the crisis. Like, so it was this sort of meta show that in the attempt of insisting that the show is fiction and we'll follow the arc of fiction, we find ourselves in the crisis. But that is what depression looks like. Is like, I think, I believe that for a lot of Asian Americans culturally, who are dealing with depression, is that we are sold a bill of goods of what life is supposed to look like. And this is actually maybe all people, and that you're supposed to get married, have kids, have a job, be happy. You get these things, you're supposed to be happy. That's fiction, right?
Right.
But what depression looks like is sometimes you're high, sometimes you're low, sometimes you're some shit hits the fan again. There's no happily ever after.
Interesting, right.
Right. I mean, a wedding maybe is that ceremony that makes you think there's a happily ever after. But it's life is fucking crazy and fucked up and horrible. And I don't know. So fiction to me is also it's a metaphor for the model minority myth. It's also how why I feel like the problem of depression and suicide exists in Asian American communities is because nobody talks about it.
Yeah, yeah. I
so there's a certain fictionalizing. That, That happens, right?
It's not like a culture of like, well, why don't you go to a therapist? It's it's really all about secrets and repression.
Yeah, secrets, repression, showing, you know, you're going to see a bunch of people today. This is what you know, don't tell anyone about this or that.
Shorthand would be like the cultural idea of like you're saving face.
Saving face. That's like that's fiction.
Which every culture has to a degree, but it's just pretty extreme.
So it's a long answer about truth.
No,
but to me, like the truth is nobody's being truthful,
right?
And so that's the meta problem of that.
I'm reading The Art of the Memoir, that book, and
am I reading that too? I feel like who wrote that one?
Mary Carr. But right now she's talking about how memoir should be truthful. As truthful as it can be. But she had an example, which is kind of what you were just saying, this guy who wrote a memoir, I think Frank McCourt.
Frank McCourt, yeah.
Started his memoir with, like, none of what you're about to read is truthful. Mm-hmm. Like, matter of fact, I think in the first couple sentences, he's, like, talking about a time before he was born, like, you know, like, but in first person.
And Mike Daisy, too, apparently now does shows. He got trouble, right, for going to a Chinese factory and creating some details that he didn't experience based more on his research than what he experienced.
But then pitching it as nonfiction or kind of verite journalism.
Yeah, to This American Life.
Theater, right, yeah.
Because, and to kind of segue this back into documentaries, there's documentary filmmakers who've gotten in trouble for, like, you know, some people feel like they've coalesced a scene or they've scripted a scene to get what they want, you know. So that stuff is always fascinating.
Yeah. I see some overlap of that, yeah.
And I'm not saying Verne has done that, or I don't think he's ever been accused of that, but you know, you never know.
Well, it's interesting getting back into Lo and Behold, because it feels very much like Talking Head interview documentary style. He's not like really cracking people too hard. Like, they already kind of all know what they're there to talk about, and it's like their jobs mostly.
Yeah, there's no gotcha.
Yeah, it's a lot of, you know, maybe he gets someone like, there's a long pause when Elon Musk is asked a question, and then he generally like has to think about it for a while. This felt like a commercial in a lot of ways, didn't it?
That's interesting. Like, explain what do you?
Well, just in terms of like, there's like most of the people treat technology in a very utopian way. There's only that one kind of example of that family that gets like, which also has to do with someone committing suicide and depression. Like, and then that the photo of their daughter.
Right.
Did she commit suicide or did she get in a car crash?
It sounds like she was suicidal.
Oh, really?
And took the car. Oh. That's what I got from that.
I just got that she was just really upset and just grabbed the car and was driving too fast.
Okay. I thought it had something to do with her. Okay. Maybe.
You never know.
But either way, the thing is like the family getting the photo.
Right, right.
And oh gosh, all the sisters just sitting there quietly and not speaking.
It was so draining. It's so emotional. Yeah.
And that's like chapter 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's also broken up into chapters.
Right.
So
how
it felt very
essay. Like,
I think it 10 total.
10 was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, that's, I think, apropos, because I think what Herzog is trying to do is show, like, okay, we have the internet, we have the information age. What are all the different avenues that something can happen with all this information? One of the worst things is trolling, and the fact that this photo was released and it should never have been. I think cops on
pure total cruelty.
Just horrible stuff. Yeah. And the fact that someone would do that is like, I don't know. So for people who don't know the story, is their father was emailed this picture of the crime scene, the accident scene.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, his daughter was, you know, mangled in this thing.
Beheaded.
Beheaded, yes.
Pretty much.
And it became big news because, you know, you just don't, that doesn't happen. At least it didn't then, or maybe it was, but it wasn't as widely reported. But
yeah. It's definitely a dark side of the internet, which I feel like he could have just focused on just the dark side of the internet.
Yeah, just reviews.
A lot of places.
It was all over the place.
The first chapter is him at UCLA, which is my alma mater, and visiting the first machine of the internet.
Yeah.
Giant machine. Maybe this is what this is.
Yeah.
The history.
I was kind of excited about that part.
I was too. Yeah.
By the end, it's about robots.
Yeah.
That don't have empathy, that could possibly...
Yeah, they don't understand love.
Yeah.
The robots will not know love.
In 2060.
Do you know love? What's going on?
Yeah, there's going to just be robots walking around kicking soccer balls. And
Elon Musk is going to have a colony on Mars and all this stuff.
However, like the first scene I thought was fascinating because like it is the UCLA lab, and I don't remember the guy's name, but he's very excited to show.
Is he the one who smacks the side of the machine?
Yeah.
It smells interesting.
Yeah.
Smell to it.
And then we learn that Lo comes from the missing G of log. Oh,
yeah.
And then UCLA was sending a transmission to Stanford.
Yes, Stanford.
Professors
at Stanford.
Yeah, and it was like they would type an L and then call them and be like, "Did you get it?" And they're like, "We got it." And then they typed an O. "Did you get it? We got it." And then they typed a G and everything crashed.
Mm-hmm.
So like it ended up just being Lo.
Yeah.
It was the first like transmission, email transmission.
And Behold.
Yeah.
For buttholes. No.
Was that an autocorrect?
I was like, B-hole. I think I would have liked more of that, like, early days, the interest in the early... Because also, like, have you guys watched Halt and Catch Fire? This will be the second time I bring this up. It's a TV show kind of about the early days of, like, personal computing.
Mm.
And it's, like, a drama. And you'd think it would be, like, really hard to milk much out of that as a drama. But it's really just about, like, basically the era of, like, people cloning IBM computers and, like... They get a lot of drama out of that. So I've been kind of interested in that period of technology. This jumps all over the place. Yeah, the early internet was like a government project, right? DARPA's defense project.
Right.
And so it took quite a while for that to translate to something of commercial use. Did they get into kind of the transition from... Yeah, I think they do. They talk about the difference between like the web and like the early internet. Like I think he talked about... how there's a the protocols like created the internet
or yeah.
different things. So basically that's like your consumer interface at that point. Before that, it's just exchanging information between like universities and
right.
government and military.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. What I think what's fascinating is when they show the guy who talks about the phone book of email addresses.
Oh yeah, that's so, right. I forgot it. Yeah, that was really cool.
At one point there was so few people with email addresses, there was a book that you could have
yeah.
where you could find other people and their email address and send them something.
Yeah.
Which is fascinating.
That is pretty fun. I was like, it was not that thick.
No.
People. So then they start talking about bad actors and people that will actually, not bad actors like we are, but you know, like someone who has like bad faith. Like, yeah, it's set up for, it's fine if everyone knows each other and there's right. a phone book. What about the one person who decides to be a troll or, oh gosh, then the main hacker guy they talk to.
That's,
that was fascinating.
That guy. I was, the first thing, did you think 400 pound hacker? I mean, he wasn't 400 no, no, no. pounds, but like.
Yeah.
All his skills were detail. Mental and not.
Yeah.
In his well, that brings me back to the thinking of like, this could have been a really good like multi-part series. I think. As it is, he just tried to cram a lot of things together. Because that I could have seen a whole thing about that guy.
That guy was fascinating. I mean, what it points to, one thing they kept going to is like the internet was made for people who, for the most part, are good people.
Yeah.
Right, right, right.
And have trust with each other.
Right.
And it, all it took for this guy to hack
Kevin
Motorola.
Mitnick. Yeah, Kevin Mitnick is his name, yeah.
For Kevin to hack Motorola was just to sweet talk the secretary.
Mm-hmm.
And he got a code, and it was just about trophies in that world.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Because he didn't steal any money, and he didn't like really do big crimes that he could have. He would just wanted to hack in, and then basically would send a code like, "Hi, I'm in here."
Oh, you remember like when he's on trial, or like he doesn't get a phone call because they're paranoid that he's going to like whistle a certain frequency
yeah.
and set off an ICBM.
Well, the prosecuting attorney wants him to be in solitary confinement because if he's allowed a phone call in prison, he yeah. feels like he can whistle in a missile code.
Yeah. Yeah. Whistle a missile.
That's, yeah.
That's a new app that we should have now.
We should have Whistle a Missile. Yeah. I mean, that's fascinating. He was talking about how he hacked in, I think, into the phone system so he could hear the FBI agents talk mm-hmm. and he had like GPS or something new when they were closing in.
Right. I think he couldn't see the content of the calls, but he could see the phone numbers and the locations. So he was able to figure out, oh, they're all gathering in my town.
Yeah.
And then he did the thing of like buying the donuts from the donut shop and labeling them FBI and
yeah.
having them in his apartment while he put all his electronic stuff at someone else's house.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
So amazing.
Well, he did jail time though. So maybe
yes,
it's
he did.
Not like.
But then he got hired by the biggest companies to like secure their internet yeah. access and stuff. So like it's a win.
Yeah.
Essentially.
That machine over there is the first piece of internet equipment. This is a military hardened machine. It has a unique odor. And it was from here that the first message was sent. A revolution began.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Now, the subtitle of this was Reveries of the Connected World, when I think that's sort of like just like dream states, maybe. Like when you think of a reverie, is a reverie more like...
I realize that. Well, that's weird.
Yeah, reveries.
There's some sad stuff. Like there was that like weird setup where for people who can't live with any kind of frequencies.
Oh, yeah. No, that was really interesting
was
as
really
well.
Interesting. That reminds me of the Better Call Saul. I saw you wearing the shirt, Paco, but is it his mentor who can't be
yeah.
around?
It's his brother.
It's his brother.
Older brother, Charles, yeah.
I didn't realize. That's what happens when you watch pirate streams of stuff.
Right,
you
right. Miss. Yeah.
Yeah. You miss big details like that. But yeah, so it's all these people who live in a...
they talk about like farrier cages,
or
right?
Something. Yeah.
It's called a farrier cage. Yeah. You, like, you can block out electromagnetic fields.
There's like a... Yeah, there's like some disc or something that blocks anything from passing.
Well, yeah, it's like, so it's interesting because the end of this thing is kind of about like telepathy and like as a way to transmit things. But then there's these people that are like, we are physically sensitive to like EMF fields or radiation, and like they have to live far away from cell towers. And it's the same place that has a, it's a satellite, right? Or it's something, it's not a satellite because satellites up there. It's a disc that's collecting information. It's like listening for background radiation in the universe.
Yeah.
So there has to be away from cell towers.
Right.
So it's just, yeah. Where was that? Like Kentucky or something like that?
I don't know. Can we look that up? But
I thought it was Virginia.
Yeah, yeah.
It's always in Virginia.
Yeah, everything happens in
Virginia. I'm surprised it's not in Vermont. That kind of thing should be in Vermont.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about Vermont. But I think my question was like, how do you bring cameras into that setting?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And how do they find them? Or contact them. Is it like carrier pigeon or
mailman
comes by and says, I'm Werner Herzog. Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Well, Werner Herzog.
Does GPS work there? Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know how they would pinpoint those folks. There's probably been like news articles. You know, those are things I always think about with documentaries is like, how did you find these people?
Yeah.
You know, they must have some really good producers that do research prior and like can locate some of these people, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I thought what I thought was cool was this Ted Nelson guy that they show early on, who, you know, came up with the parallel presentation of the internet.
A parallel presentation.
What
I'm
was that?
What that was.
It's the guy that showed like he was like on his houseboat in Seattle.
Oh yeah, like the other way, right? Because he was talking about text linking, or just like right. It was an early. It could have gone that way, but it went another way. He's
right.
Kind of like a Tesla or someone.
Yeah.
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 I mean, I noticed like I was cooking as I was watching this section of it, and I was like, all right, nobody was into his idea, but he lives on a houseboat, so someone bought some idea he had.
Yeah. No, it's really cool. Like he was showing how like what Google would be like today if his ideas had caught on of paralleling information, and it was really interesting.
Yeah, almost like TweetDeck or something. Or we were talking about HyperCard when we were talking to Yacht. They were talking about, well, they're really into like all this like early internet stuff as well. But when watching him talk, I was like, okay, clearly this guy is working on so many levels above me and maybe even above Herzog that it's just like, it just makes more sense if I show it to you, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, I remember like being like, oh yeah, these are like all these dudes that were super abstract and like academic, yeah.
Yeah, the exhausted nerd type. He's just like,
I'll just have to show you.
He's like, I don't want to explain it again. He also had a big chip on his shoulder.
Right. As like, one might. Yeah.
Especially when you're like a genius in something that has made other geniuses fabulously wealthy.
Dude, that's totally why you should watch Halt and Catch Fire. I mean, it's like all this stuff about people basically cloning like IBMs or like even just the fact that like, you know, the interface for the Mac, like the UI, they kind of took it from Xerox. Someone at Xerox was doing that and they basically were like, oh, you're not really doing any of this, right? I'll just take it from you.
Yeah.
So it's just like who gets to market first. That's a lot of what that's about. It's like who brings it to market.
Absolutely. What network is that on?
Let's see. I want to say it's AMC does Halt and Catch Fire. I think it's in its third season now.
Never even heard. Have you seen it?
No.
No.
I watch Shark Tank.
Yeah. Shark Tank. That's a fascinating
Herzog doing Shark Tank.
Yeah, that would be in. That's
stuff in the tank, an entrepreneur.
So one thing we asked and our guests is to kind of pitch this, like if now that you've seen it, and we're kind of talking about it, and a friend asked you like, what have you seen lately? How would you pitch this doc to them?
Or would you?
All right.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, like, maybe it'd be like a really sweet German voice.
He does have a sweet German.
Something to get to bed to tonight. I mean, George and I both said we fell asleep.
Yeah,
watching I was very tired when I was finishing this up. Yeah.
Yeah, I fell asleep watching it last night. But
or what is there to recommend in it?
I think what I it's an interesting dance down memory lane, I guess, and down possibility, like to visit the first internet machine was pretty interesting, especially
that was
now
cool.
because mm-hmm. our whole life is online.
Oh yeah.
This is going to live online. I think also this idea that that when the internet is erased, we won't know how to live.
That was crazy. Yeah,
that we have no record whatsoever.
The apocalyptic
of what
part.
Happened or how to mm-hmm. move forward. That I think is interesting. I'm not in love with this one.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to watch it from a filmmaker eye.
Yeah.
It is a lot of stuff.
There is a lot of stuff.
I mean, and also, like, he himself doesn't barely use technology at all. Like,
no.
He doesn't use a cell phone. He's not, like, you'd think it'd be interesting because he's not an expert in it.
Like a
that
neophyte,
he would focus on something other than soccer playing robots, which are fun.
Mm-hmm.
But then that almost seems like it's just, like, boosterism. He didn't get into, like, the have you seen those videos of the dog-shaped robots? From they're coming out of Massachusetts. I think they call it like Boston Technologies or something. Oh man, that's when you get into some singularity shit that's real weird. So they almost look like they do like Christmas videos with these things that are like four-legged and they like can supposedly maneuver through terrain. They put like reindeer hats on them and things like that. But there's this video of one of these robots where it's just wandering through the hallways of the office and people just pop out of nowhere and just start kicking it. They kick the robot and it self corrects.
Oh wow.
But you can't help but like imbue some kind of personality and be like, oh, this is like this robot's gonna take revenge on this whole campus once
right.
it has sentience. It's like, oh, remember all those times it kicked me?
Yeah.
Asshole. Yeah.
I think it was sort of an unnatural transition from internet to robots.
Yeah.
That, I feel that in artificial intelligence.
Right, right.
That's where I got confused. But I guess what I would pitch it is sort of like it's a I don't know. I would pitch this as like a 10-part sort of montage.
Mm-hmm. Reverie.
Who the fuck wants to watch a montage?
Right.
Reverie. I guess, yeah, reverie might be the word through internet possibility and technology.
Yeah. Well, it's just odd because it's such a, it's lauded. Like people really like this documentary. And I mean, it's certainly not, I don't think Herzog's best work, but there is something interesting about this doc. I'm not quite sure what it is.
It's interesting because I think we live so much on the internet now and we don't pause to think about the origins and the future at the same time. At least the future in that. I don't think about robots. I think about like what's the next Twitter. Maybe that's where my thoughts are at.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's also interesting is when one of the people he interviews describes this as the dark age of the internet where so much happened very quickly.
Mm.
And it's interesting to step back and wonder, will this moment, the last 10 years and the next 10 years be this sort of boom of activity, the industrial revolution internet?
Could it be a bust? Sometimes I wonder if people, after so much like disengagement from society and realness, and also just the trolling and the negativity that happens online, if people are going to start taking a step back from like social media mostly.
I have a lot of friends that just quit Facebook after, kind of during the election, after the election.
I don't blame them. This is a very weird time to be online. I mean, I'm trolling harder than ever though.
Mm-hmm. And people like us kind of still need to promote ourselves in the midst of it all. But you're trolling
everybody.
POTUS.
I'm trolling all the wives, all the kids. I was blocked from Eric Trump's Twitter.
Oh, nice. Well, congrats.
Hurt his feelings.
Yeah.
Betsy DeVos.
Uh-huh.
I think Ben Carson doesn't tweet, but like like everyone in power and culture sort of like
does anyone respond to you?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I've been responding to
it. I'm getting death threats. I'm getting
Jesus.
Shut up. Like I used to link it to my homepage, ChristinaWong.com, but now I link it to my Facebook fan page to see if that would shift. Mm. Because I thought, people won't send me death threats if I can just click on
your Facebook fan page.
But they are.
Yeah,
like
they still are.
They still are.
Wow.
And
because it's less anonymous.
I mean, the threats are more like, you're going to get killed. You're asking to get killed. Mm. You know, that's a threat.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, I don't know. I just have built a thick skin around it, and I have just been trying to take precautions in other arenas. But we elected a troll. I didn't elect him, but you know, there's something to be said about being polarizing, and angering is what cuts through the noise. And like I've like gotten 12,000 new followers since inauguration, like just trolling. And and in a weird way, like I have friends who are like, don't give him a platform, don't give him attention, but I'm building a little platform.
Right.
And I'm bringing attention to, you know, Executive Order 9066 or like DAPL, or, you know, just other things that I feel like I can, but I don't know if this is all imagined either.
Yeah.
Right. This is just, it's just thumbs on a screen.
Yeah. I mean, you could almost just do like I would say like Twitter, even a lot of people have been like into talking shit on Twitter. I feel like Twitter's still like a little bit better than like Reddit, in my opinion. I don't know.
Reddit, I feel, is like for people with tech jobs that want to talk shit in long form. I mean, what am I not understanding about Reddit?
Oh, I mean, basically, I remember a couple months ago people being like, okay, Twitter is now the platform for the alt-right. It's almost like what they did with like Pepe. Like Pepe was just a cool cartoon, and then it became like taken over by this mascot. So it's like Twitter doesn't inherently have a good or bad, right? It just, it's the number of people that have like turned it one direction. I mean, they managed to ban Milo Yiannopoulos from it, and like I was like looking. I'm like, I wish I could figure out a way to ban Trump from Twitter. That would be great if enough people just reported him for like abusing people and being racist. That would be, you know, enough to do that. But I think there's also a documentary about the dark web. Have you guys seen that one? Mm-hmm. It sort of has to do with like Silk. Actually, it's mostly about Silk Road. Mm-hmm. I'm blanking on the name of it right now, but it talks about this whole idea of like the dark web and like all this, you know, the people that are like ordering drugs and like ordering hits on people and things like that. There's like a whole side that I'm surprised Herzog didn't get into that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this is
there'd be a lot to talk about there.
Pretty light as far as the internet goes and what he does.
No sex in this either, right?
I don't think
you've, like porn or anything. Stuff. Yeah,
there's no mention of porn. Like, hello, that's, like most of the internet is porn.
Yeah, it's mostly kind of from like a scholarly aspect, and like, you know, it's kind of like the engineers behind the internet. I mean, there is that moment. I found it really odd with the monks in Chicago.
Yeah, I didn't really get what the angle on that was either.
And then I read,
it's like, it's funny to see monks with cell phones. I'm like, I guess.
But I read, talk about being truthful. I read something where like I think he asked them to like to look at
do
their
it?
To, yeah oh. or something along those lines, where it was kind of like they were kind of like, hey, could you guys like not get on the bus yet, because I guess they were all on a bus or something.
I mean, I guess if it was trying to make a point, like it's other than it's funny that even monks need technology, I guess. I don't know. Well, I was thinking about more like the stuff, like it goes dark in some ways. Like it talks about the trolling that happened to that family, and it talks about like what happens when society is no longer connected. But one of the producers of the film, or I think the producer of the film, is NetScout, which is just some technology company. And like one of the guys at NetScout, like I guess, approached Herzog with this as like an idea. Mm. So it's like, it's kind of like branded content in a way that's on Netflix. I mean, did this get in theaters? I don't know if it actually got. It might have had a very short run in theaters, like produced by this technology company. So of course, they are invested in like having like a global view about like systems and networks.
Sure.
But then it ends up being a little not very like pushing any one particular direction. Like any one of those, like the hacker guy would have been great to have a whole thing about.
Yeah, no, he was the most interesting part of this entire documentary.
Or just like the very that early room at UCLA or like early DARPA, you could make a really interesting thing about that. Do a lot of talking head interviews for that.
Yeah.
And just kind of, it's just like a weird survey of just like, technology is interesting. I don't really use it, but I guess you guys will like die if you don't have it.
Yeah.
Do you think it's, I can't remember the format of his old stuff. Do you think it's intended chapters because it could be broken out into 10 viral clips?
That's
interesting. I wasn't quite clear on even why the grouping by chapters, because he didn't really like do that with a lot of his other stuff.
No, it's not quite a style of his.
Yeah.
And it's like sort of a cop-out, don't you think?
Yeah.
I think it's easily consumed in chapter wise, you know, like I think it's easier to edit and easier for people to watch, especially if it's like they're like, this is going to go basically straight to Netflix. And I think viewers of Netflix have this kind of, it's almost binge like
watching.
Right. Exactly. Even though it's one 90-minute doc, like it's like how people kind of watch things on Netflix. So it's easier to consume, I guess. I'm making that up. But it's like,
the internet actually shifted the way we watch his documentary. That's the moment I was having watching. Absolutely. That's the way I was watching this. That's the lens of like.
Yeah.
Him and Michael Moore, I feel like I remember if I did see Grizzly Man, which I can't remember if I have or not.
Oh, you'd remember.
I think I saw part of it. But like I just feel like the way we used to engage in content is so different, and a voice like that style that he shot Lo and Behold 20 years ago would have been like, whoa, like the way those wide shots of the family, sort of staring.
Right.
But it felt, there's so many commercials and so much stylistic stuff happening now that it just feels a little disingenuous, you know, or a little forced or.
Yes. Well, especially like he also last year put out Into the Volcanoes, which is all about volcanoes. And
Into the Inferno?
Is that Into the Inferno, rather. Yeah. And it's really, I really liked it. I liked Into the Inferno.
It's like man versus nature. And this is less man versus nature, like man versus himself, or like man versus his own technology he created.
Yeah. I mean, it had kind of like, you know, when substitute teachers would play videos in class, you know, like when it was a rainy day or something. And
this one or Into the Inferno?
No, Lo and Behold.
Yeah. This one definitely felt like a little, like infotainment.
It was info. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like it seemed like a rainy day recess kind of idea in that.
I could have used more him in it even. I feel like maybe that's what was missing. Like occasionally you'd hear him off screen, never on camera. And, you know, like it felt like some segments had a little bit more Werner Herzog flavor to them. Some of them were like less so. Yeah.
We're going to have a revolution in our definition of what it means to be human.
Will our children's children's children need the companionship of humans? Or will they have evolved in a world where that's not important?
If you like a good murder mystery story, you'll love June's Journey, a free hidden object mobile game where Detective June Parker unravels the mystery of her sister's death. Travel back to the beautifully illustrated 20s, find clues, discover hidden objects, and watch the story unfold with new chapters released weekly. Put your detective skills to the test. Download June's Journey on Android or iOS, or play online via Facebook games.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Oh, Trump just tweeted.
At you?
No. 43 minutes ago. It's okay. I missed the window to troll. I missed the window.
Yeah. I'm sure that's relevant. Yeah.
But what was I saying? Ooh.
Oh, well.
But you were telling us
Trump ruined it.
You're number two Trump?
Oh, I am the number two top Trump troll. I am. By Black Enterprise named me that. I'm neither black. I'm sort of enterprising.
Yeah.
So that's a huge honor.
That's huge incredible. Honor. By like number or by
quality
hit?
Quality? By an arbitrary freelance writer who writes for Black Enterprise.
Who picked you?
Who picked me.
Okay, got it.
Put me on a listicle, which is the most truthful.
But if you got blocked by Trump, that would be
there are people that he blocks, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, I read an article about it, and it's sort of random. Like, there's some cat, like fictitious cat blocked.
Ah, that's awesome. Angry cat.
That's right, yeah.
That's
Garfield.
Is it Garfield? I wonder what it takes to be blocked. Like, what's his hitting point?
It's got to be a fine line of getting blocked by Trump and not getting investigated by the Secret Service. That's like the sweet spot. If you can get like, I'm like, they can't. Secret Service cannot be investigating every person that says something negative about Trump.
That is true.
Yeah,
that would be a huge waste of resources.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious though, because sometimes people will reply to my tweets, like Trump supporters, and will like CC CC Secret Service and CIA, and go, "Is this a threat?" And I go back, "Is it?" Like, it's like, really? You want to start?
Yeah.
you know, let's come on.
I had a friend who private messaged me on Facebook and said, she's like, I see all your, like, I grew up in a very small town, very conservative. And she was like, I see your posts about Trump, and I don't think you should do that because, you know, he's just trying to help America and you're not being a true American.
Oh,
and then I wrote to her, I said, well, listen, the Democrats pay me to post this.
Yeah.
And I need a job. And you're talking about Trump's trying to bring jobs back to America. Like, you're trying to take my job away. And then she said, well, I'll send you money if you're that hard up. And then I said, but you can't pay me what the Democrats are paying me. Like, they're paying me really well to post this stuff.
There are people who really think that Soros is giving out checks.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, a lot of people.
There's too many scabs.
Right. And paid protesters?
Like, that's so crazy.
If they were paying the protesters, I'd be out with a dry erase board every day, like, mm-hmm. protesting yeah. something.
What do you protest with a dry erase board? This is very interesting.
Because he can change it up.
Oh, you change it up. Ah.
There we go. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Teaching people?
I represent blankness, just like blank.
I'd bring my overhead projector and my
I feel like none of us would have, like, a career without the internet. I don't know what job I could possibly have.
Right? How did they publish themselves, like, how did comedians
write like a press release and mail it to someone?
Yeah,
like, you have to mail it to like the Chronicle and
fax
hope
it
that they, or fax
right.
it
to publicists.
I mean, when I started my comedy show, and I started my comedy show in San Francisco in 2003, and I remember like stuffing envelopes and mailing press mm-hmm. releases to people. Yeah. That was, and you're just like, this is going to end up nowhere.
Yeah, I interned at a radio station. I'd open up all the press releases that came through the fax machine.
Yeah, the faxtrola.
Figure it out. Yeah.
Sort them out, yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy. This is an interesting story. It's like, I work at this casting agency in San Francisco, and they're telling me about how it used to be where they would film people on Betamax, and then they would have all these VCRs, and they would edit on the different VCRs auditions.
And then take Polaroids.
And Polaroids, yeah. You'd sit, stand against the wall, and they'd take a Polaroid. And then they had a guy on a motorcycle that could get to SFO by 5 that would sit at their corner, and you'd give him cash.
Yeah.
You'd give him like $50 cash.
Physical delivery people. Those people yeah. was not... That was a big thing in San Francisco when I was a teenager. Like, that was a fantasy I used to have.
Right, yeah.
Was to, like, because Puck from the Real World was bike delivery guy.
That's a lot of people's San Francisco fantasy.
But was, like, to hook up with, like, a hot bike delivery guy. And now it's like, that doesn't exist.
No, they still exist.
They do, I guess, couriers.
Not the way it was in the 90s when Puck was doing it.
Where they're, like, punk rock guys with tats.
Wasn't there a movie? Even about...
They were trying to do a sitcom about bike messengers. Yeah. Did not go very well.
Yeah.
I remember, like, watching the pilot for that.
Right.
But that was a very 90s phenomenon.
So you grew up in San Francisco.
In the city, yeah.
In the city of San Francisco. And what got you interested in performance and acting?
I never knew what I did now exists. Like, I didn't frequent weird shit, which is a way to describe, like, the people I know.
Right. Yeah.
So I did do high school speech, and I was in plays in high school, but we mostly produced like dead white people stuff, like Neil Simon plays. Right. But he might be alive. Is he alive or dead?
I think he's dead. I think he died.
Well, his work lives on.
I wish there was a way to look that up.
Yeah.
Very sanitized work.
Right.
His voice lives on. And I remember like your college major being so important, and wondering if I should major in theater, but then also like, this would totally disappoint my family, and if I failed at it, oh my God. And no, it doesn't matter because I'm in this mess right now.
Yeah.
Have you done solo shows about your family specifically?
I mentioned them, but that would really kill them.
Well, you know,
I probably wouldn't write about them, but I don't know.
I think you've hit some kind of success level amongst Asian Americans, because my mom sent me some interview that you did.
Really?
Here's someone who's Asian and does comedy.
Really?
Do you know her? I'm like, actually, randomly, I do know her. But she's just like, she's someone who's doing this, so... You are to at least my mom.
So live up to me. Like, can I show up at your mom's house dressed like a giant vagina and go, you want George?
I don't know.
Be me.
I don't think that.
I don't think
I mean, I didn't figure it out until I was in college I was looking at the theater majors, and theater majors are really annoying.
Oh, my God.
UCLA also?
I don't. There's one at UCLA. I don't know if this is across the board, but I realized, man, theater people are annoying.
Oh, they're the worst.
And intimidating. And I don't know that this is what I want to spend 4 years doing, is competing against these folks. Mm-hmm. And yet I get produced by theater departments now that are not as annoying. But
Actors are the worst people.
Yeah.
They really are.
Actors are awful.
They're awful. They're
Here's my headshot, by the
horrible.
Way.
They're, some of them are just like harmless deer. They're just like, I just don't have a brain or whatever. And others are just like smile and stab you in the back at the same time.
Have you tried dating actors?
Yes.
That's the worst. It's
horrible.
I can see why people didn't want to date me for a long time. It's also why I didn't want to tell people I was an actor here.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was no performance artist because saying you're like, we have the best pictures on online dating, but
of
like.
Of course. Yeah. Headshot. It's the
but
best you'll ever look.
Oh, like the separation between private life and public life is not there.
Yeah.
And then if you're not a successful actor,
yeah,
really someone has to deal with coaching you through that shit.
Yeah.
Are you coaching them through that shit?
Absolutely. I did most of the stuff I do is about my ex-girlfriend now, but when we were dating, I'd have to run my jokes by her because she got so used to me saying shit on stage and she'd be like, no, I don't want you to talk about that. But that, okay, that's cute. You can talk about that. It's like being censored.
Having an editor, yeah.
Yeah, I had an editor. The government coming down on my jokes.
I say Freeches spee? I have no idea what I'm saying anymore.
George is drunk now.
I fell asleep watching this again. No. no. Yeah, no. I don't tell people that I do acting because I don't. I just show up and I'm on your commercial looking like me. And that's literally, I'm like, you know what? This required no training.
Commercial acting is the easiest.
The auditions are harder.
Right.
The auditions are really hard.
The audition is the hardest part.
Yeah. And
it's a mind fuck because I wasn't booking for a long time and I took it really personally.
Yeah.
Like I failed, but it's not, it's so chancy random.
Yeah.
No, it has nothing to do with talent level.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm involved in commercial auditioning probably 4 or 5 times a month behind the camera.
Yeah.
And I see how the clients pick people. And it's a lot of times it's like, Jesus, it's fucking 5. I have to get home. How about her?
Yeah.
You know, and like it comes down to just pointing at a headshot.
I just did a national commercial and like literally like I went to a fitting a day and a half before the shoot. And when I got to the shoot, there was a totally different dude for the other dude.
Yeah.
Like they just
swapped
that dude out.
Oh,
it's like, oh, well, it sucks for that dude. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I've gotten not booked something because I used to have like a little hair thing under my and they didn't think to ask me if I would just shave it. They just went with the next guy who didn't have it.
But you chose to put that in your headshot.
It wasn't on my headshot.
No, it wasn't your headshot.
No,
it was just an audition. Okay, I see. Yeah.
So anyway, that's why you have to tell your parents I'm a performance artist. Right. All the singles out there.
Every time someone says performance art, I think of the scene in Big Lebowski when he has to go see his
friend's show.
Yeah, his landlord's because he hasn't paid rent, and so to be like to try to get more time, he goes and sees his landlord's performance art piece, and it cracks me up.
Funny.
It's a great scene.
Well, we should talk a little bit about Lo and Behold at this. We're near the end of the beholding.
We're near the end of the beholding. Yes, we've seen a beholding. Yeah. This is what I want in my life. I want self-driving cars. I really desperately want a self-driving car in my life. And I also want the Tesla tube that I've heard so much about.
A self-driving car for the drive between here and San Francisco would be good.
Just
for the 5.
Yeah, hell yeah, dude. I'm going to get some work done, maybe take a nap, be able to...
It's called a train, isn't it?
Well, yeah, there are trains. There's the Megabus and stuff like that, which is like the old school self-driving car.
That's not a train.
No.
Megabus.
You're also not going to get any work done on the Megabus.
No.
That's my experience.
I just like, I've seen them now, and I see them a lot in San Francisco. I just saw one...
Oh, self-driving car?
Self-driving car like 3 days ago. It's really wild.
San Francisco is the testing ground for all of this technology because it's where all the nerds are, and there's Stanford and Berkeley and all these other things. So, yeah, like everything is going to get tested there. I've saw one. I've seen a couple of those.
Yeah.
On the freeway. Yeah.
I think it's awesome. I would love. You don't want a self-driving car?
There was that long scene in the dock of a robot serving water, and then the
god
walks in and gets the water.
That's a Japanese robot. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, we need robots to take care of us when we're old. Because those of us not having kids,
right?
I was like, that's the moment I went, I can not relax because how many more immigrants are we gonna? I mean, that's kind of a
yeah.
Home caretaker,
yeah,
sort of a job that we think of.
I didn't think about that.
Immigrants.
I was a,
you don't have kids?
I don't.
You
know.
Don't, you're not going to have
not
them?
Not that I know of.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Do you have? I don't have kids. I never thought about the caretaking robot.
Really? I obsess about it. I have so much anxiety.
Just because we're Asian. We're thinking about it.
I know, because I guess white people just send their parents
go to home.
Homes yeah. and right. stuff. And I'm like, that's horrifying.
Yeah.
Like, my parents had jobs and were taking care of my grandparents in their old age.
Oh, wow.
So crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm willing to do that. I feel.
Yeah.
But that robot would, you'd fucking die if that robot was in charge of you. Because that robot took forever to just unscrew a cap
that's
on a
true.
Thermos. You'd be like, give me my Benadryl.
Short. It was a short robot.
He was short. And I love the way that weird robot walks. It just walks like an old man already.
That's funny.
Go. But that's where I saw it useful for the future. And I actually felt calm for a moment. Because I have a lot of freak out about what am I going to do when I'm old if nobody will call someone to call the old folks home, so I'm not wandering the streets pants on
in Koreatown or wherever you're at. Right, lost.
I feel like the stuff that was interesting here in Lo and Behold is just done better in Black Mirror, which is basically a science fiction anthology show. It's like all the dystopian stuff gets handled pretty well in Black Mirror, and then the kind of the techno free market utopianism, like Elon Musk. That was an interesting line from Elon Musk in here, because he was like, well, if you actually had artificial intelligence in charge of everything and you just gave it certain parameters, it might be like, well, we should just start a war because it'll be good for the economy. I'm like, oh, this guy's in fucking the cabinet now. Isn't he like the economic candidate of Trump? And like, you know, and he's also saying like, it wouldn't be a good thing. But it's also like, oh, but you realize like.
But you know about it.
Yeah. You're the self-driving car guy. You're the self-driving economy guy.
Someday I hope war won't be good for an economy.
Yeah. You know? Like, you'd think.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fact that people factor that in so nonchalantly.
Of course, yeah.
And they're always background actors, too. that I feel like, or like that's where I first heard it. I was, many years ago, I did background work, and it was like, I got to stop doing it because background work actors say the worst shit.
Yes.
They're like, it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve.
Yes. Oh, really?
That was one woman.
Yeah.
Another one was like, but war is good for an economy. And I was just like, all right.
I did background once, and I was like, I'll never do this again. It was a horrible experience.
It's awful.
I've done background a little bit, but like it wasn't too bad, the ones that I was in. So I don't know. I guess I'm lucky.
You are lucky, man.
But yeah, I feel like this is like a Bay Area heavy movie. I guess there's a lot of Carnegie Mellon, a little bit of Stanford, a little, just like, it's almost like Werner goes to college. He's like, I'm going to find some talking heads at these colleges. Yeah. Then I'll find Elon Musk and someone else will talk to me. And it's probably connected to the fact that like it's produced by this tech company.
Right. Yeah. It should have had a little at the end, like some sort of disclaimer.
Well, it just had the name of I looked it up because I'm like, what's NetScout?
Yeah.
What the fuck is it? That was a disclaimer. Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck is NetScout?
That's kind of disappointing that might be the future of docs.
Yeah. You're right.
Kickstarters or that.
Right. And there's like product placement, like Werner Herzog's like, wouldn't you like a stick of Wrigley's? <You know?
laughs> Which was your favorite robot? What was your favorite robot in this?
So let's go over them. There's soccer chimp, playing robots.
Right. Soccer playing robots.
There was
cute little guys.
The water robot.
Water given.
Japanese robot.
Oh, right. The Japanese. Yeah. Yep. That's kind of a famous robot, that one, Asimo or something.
That first one.
The chimp one, they called him. Chimp.
That would turn the dial if.
Yeah,
in case of an emergency.
He kind of had like tank treads on his, as
right.
Shoulder pads.
What other? I don't remember that many. They all robots look the same.
Oh, that's gonna be a hate crime.
I think if you have like 10 grand, you should invest in a robotics company because that's the wave. I mean, obviously, that's what's gonna happen in the future.
Yeah,
yeah. I think there's gonna be robots in our home in 5 years.
I feel like he
already is. There's the fucking vacuum thing that
Roomba.
The Roomba's going around.
Yeah, also there's gonna be a solar flare. That's the other thing that I learned.
Right.
It's going to be a solar flare.
Yeah.
And then when we count on all the robots, that's when we resort to... That's when cannibalism is going to kick in, pretty much when the solar flare comes.
Right.
Well, the SpaceX thing was... I mean, I've followed
that before.
That's Elon
Musk, right? Yeah.
The Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Going to Mars. I don't know if I would do that. Would you go to Mars?
Personally, no. I don't even go on roller coasters.
He's like, yeah. I'll go. Yeah. That was pretty good. He's like, I'll do it.
Yeah.
I should stop doing that voice. I'm totally like fine with just being here and just the way whatever shakes out here, it's gonna shake out here. I mean, like, I don't even want to go to Canada. You know, I've thought about it, but it's like, you know what? We're too close. We're gonna share nuclear winds. Mm. It's like, what's the fucking point? We're better off trying to figure out what to do here.
Right.
Did you think about moving after?
My girlfriend was like, we should definitely look at Canada. And I'm like, I like Canada, but honestly, we're too close to this bullshit. Mm-hmm. They're just going to invade Canada.
I thought about going to Uganda. Like, that's...
Oh, really?
And they've got a dictator.
Well, you're a rap star.
Yeah, you're a rap star over there.
I'll move wherever I'm a rap star.
I have enough money. I could just live there for a while. Yeah. It's insane over there, but it's at least I know what to expect.
I actually don't even know if money... I'm worried about, like, does money even fucking matter at some point?
It always matters.
Knowing how... Well, I know, but like, is the amount of money I have, it's just going to... Oh, the economy is going to fluctuate so much.
Right.
Are we going to have bank runs? I mean, even when like there was like people talking about doing boycotts because of Dakota Pipeline, I'm like, oh, we're just kind of doing mini bank runs. Mm. That's what that would be, you know. Yeah. So who knows?
Well, let's all move to Uganda and we can be...
And not be on the internet.
We can be Little Wong's manager.
How long could you live without the internet right now?
Oh, jeez, not
like your
long.
GPS didn't work.
Live.
Yeah.
Like, would I die if I don't have it, or like just not have a daily life?
Let's say like you had no access.
Couldn't even order lotion on Amazon?
No lotion on Amazon. No drones. No drone delivery.
Mm. Two, three days.
2-3 days. Okay, like, because they were saying, like, someone said in another thing I was watching, like, society is only like 4 square meals away from chaos. How fast would that go down if just like solar flare hit all the internet right now? There's still enough people that are like not online. There's like all those people in the valley. They're probably function okay. They'll be playing Salty Dog on their banjos when the apocalypse comes.
That's funny.
There's going to be funny. It'd be like even a 2-tiered system. There's a digital wall for the apocalypse.
Yeah.
There's like a digital divide. Like, we had an apocalypse. Like, we didn't have that apocalypse.
Yeah, I didn't get
it's
that.
Fine for me. Yeah, alternative facts.
I know how to plant corn. I think I could just eat corn for a while.
You could eat corn, but it takes a while for that corn to grow, though.
Not necessarily.
I think in the Martian, doesn't he just live off potatoes? That's what you have to do. You have to like figure out some potato farming situation. Yeah. And then hope you don't get like a potato crop.
Oof.
All right. Well, this has been a really optimistic time.
We're going to die.
Discussing Herzog with our guest, Christina Wong. Thank you, Christina. Thanks, bye.
Self-driving car.
Thanks for listening.
You can find more episodes of SupDoc, show notes, updates, and more at supdocpodcast.com.
We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at SupDocPodcast.
If you have comments, corrections, or want to suggest a documentary, email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.
The show is listener supported. You can donate to the show at patreon.com/supdocpodcast.
If you can't donate financially, please subscribe, comment, or tell a friend about SupDoc.
We'd like to thank Documentary News for their ongoing support.
SupDoc is produced by Will Scovel.
Our theme music is by David Siegel.